You know, I've kind of compared them to community centers, churches, meeting halls, all rolled up into one, because so much of our history is wrapped around the bar scene.
And the way I think of it is, my first experience at a gay bar is I slept with two hairy beasts.
After you went to dinner with a friend, you would go to the bar just to see somebody that, you know, was like you and have a common experience.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Italy criminalizes surrogacy agreements with foreign mothers, Moscow cops arrest 50 on Coming Out Day, and Gay Barchives preserves a treasure trove of queer bar tales. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm Michael Lebeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 19th, 2024. It's now a crime in Italy for a couple to go abroad to have a surrogacy baby. The legislation was a pet project of right-wing Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni. It passed the Senate this week by a vote of 85 to 58. Parliament's lower house had already approved it. The harsh penalty is up to 2 years in prison, on top of a fine equivalent to more than $1 million. Meloni has called surrogate arrangements to carry pregnancy for another person a symbol of an abominable society that confuses desire with rights and replaces God with money. To veteran queer Italian activist Franco Grillini, it's the law that's monstrous when the Italian birth rate is plunging and same-gender couples want children. He told Reuters at a demonstration ahead of the vote, if someone has a baby, they should be given a medal. Here instead, you're sent to jail. Since domestic surrogacy and domestic or international adoption by lesbian and gay couples are already banned, the new law seems to specifically target queer families. 90% of Italian couples who use surrogacy are heterosexual, according to the Rainbow Families president, Alessia Crosini. She pointed out to The Guardian that the new ban indeed targets lesbian and gay couples who cannot easily hide coming home with a new baby. Meloni's Brothers of Italy party habitually persecutes sexual and gender minorities. Last year, the country's first female prime minister ordered city councils in Milan and elsewhere to stop registering the children of same-gender couples. One of Meloni's 2022 campaign slogans was, yes to the natural family, no to the LGBT lobby. Crocini's responded defiantly to the new law in ANSA and vowed, we as rainbow families will not stop and will continue our battle in the courts and in the streets. We will fight every day to affirm the beauty and freedom of our families and our sons and daughters.
Police raided two clubs popular with the queer community in downtown Moscow and arrested some 50 people during the early morning hours of October 11th. It was National Coming Out Day in North America, which has been adopted around the world. Two pro-Kremlin Russian Telegram channels claimed that the raid on Central Station was to fight drug trafficking. There were also claims that drag shows there mocked the Russian military's invasion of Ukraine. Riot police showed up at Three Monkeys, which is operated by the same ownership as Central Station. Videos show patrons at both venues being either forced to the ground or with arms up leaning against walls for an aggressive frisking. The official story is that the raids were prompted by civilian complaints of indecent behavior. Similar invasions of queer Russian night spots launched soon after anti-queer legislation was enacted in recent years. It's not yet known where this week's detainees are being held.
A groundbreaking New South Wales law will establish rights for transgender people and strengthen existing protections for sexual minority communities. The Australian state's Legislative Council approved Equality Legislation Amendment, LGBTIQA+, Bill 2023. After several starts and stops, it was first approved there last year, more than a year after its first introduction in Parliament. This week's approval in the Legislative Assembly was the final step. The bill was sponsored by Independent Out MP Alex Greenwich. He said, "We've got more work to do, and we start that work now with new confidence from these significant wins for our community." Anna Brown of Equality Australia called the measure the largest package of LGBTIQ plus reforms in NSW history. The new law allows trans people to change the gender marker on their birth certificates without having to undergo surgery. It also creates a non-binary identity option. Threatening to out a queer person becomes a criminal offense under the new laws. They also protect children born overseas via surrogacy and their parents from discrimination. Ashley Scott of All Kids Are Equal applauded the move. She said, "No loving and caring family should be unequal under the eyes of NSW law."
The dishonorable discharges of 820 U.S. veterans kicked out of the military for being queer are being upgraded to honorable. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin announced that the move was to redress the harms done by Don't Ask, Don't Tell and other policies on these former service members. This week's action follows a year-long review of individual service records. An estimated 13,500 people were booted from the U.S. Armed Forces under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. President Joe Biden issued pardons in June to service members wrongly discharged for their sexual orientation or gender identity under the policy or then existing anti-sodomy laws. However, applications for a certificate of pardon or a discharge upgrade required further review. There have been several complaints that the process is convolutedly complicated and unnecessarily antagonistic. Those obstacles have discouraged many from applying. Secretary Austin says that 96% of the applicants who made it through the system have been upgraded. Upgrades to honorable allow queer veterans to access several major Veterans Administration benefits, including educational advancement, health care coverage, and home loan programs. CBS News reports that the Defense Department is sending letters to eligible veterans with information about how to get a copy of their new discharge papers. Because of confidential information in these papers, a vet must make the direct request personally. Austin is promising to continue to strive to do right by every American patriot who has honorably served our country.
Dr. Mei Lau of Dallas, Texas is the first practitioner in the country to face legal jeopardy for providing hormones to her pediatric transgender patients. Infamously anti-queer State Attorney General Ken Paxton filed a lawsuit on October 17th, accusing Lau of violating the state's ban on gender-affirming health care for transgender minors. Dr. Lau practices at the Children's Health Center and is professor of the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center. Paxton is demanding an injunction against her continued treatment of trans minors and punitive fines of up to $10,000 for each of the more than 20 alleged violations. Harper Seldon with the ACLU's LGBTQ and HIV Project called Paxton's lawsuit the predictable and terrifying result of the anti-trans law. Seldon says it's the first time that any state has tried to actually enforce its trans minors treatment ban. The law in the Lone Star State prevents trans people under the age of 18 from accessing hormone therapies and puberty blockers. It also bans surgery on minors, which is rarely recommended for children. Paxton's press release called the widely approved standard of care for transgender minors dangerous, unscientific medical interventions that have irreversible and damaging effects. Extensive research has proved that's just not true. Puberty blockers and hormone therapies are absolutely reversible. Despite all the evidence, Paxton vows doctors who continue to provide these harmful gender transition drugs and treatments will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. The U.S. Supreme Court is scheduled to hear arguments in a case challenging Tennessee's similar pediatric gender-affirming healthcare ban in December.
Finally, U.S. Vice President and Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris was treated to rare heckling at a campaign rally in La Crosse, Wisconsin on October 17th. Her snap-worthy response was a hit.
"We remember Donald Trump hand-selected three members of the United States Supreme Court. with the intention that they would undo the protections of Roe v. Wade, and they did as he intended. Oh, you guys are at the wrong rally. No, I think you meant to go to the smaller one down the street.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude for the week ending October 19th, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Joe Bainline. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael Lebeau. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Stories about the gay bar scene say a lot about the history of the LGBTQ community. I walked into a dimly lit, smoky room half filled with white gay men in their 20s and 30s. Heads turned. "It's starting to smell like fish in here," one guy snarled through clenched teeth. "Broiled," chortled another. The guys I was with yanked me out by the arm backwards, and we went on to try the next place on our list. Queer spaces and our first experiences of them vary by era, region, and character. The Lesbian Bar Project, streaming on YouTube and Roku, celebrates part of that history and raises funds to support the remaining venues for queer women. However, the lion's share of LGBTQ watering holes have catered to a male clientele. That history is being documented in an online archive of the sometimes hilarious, sometimes moving personal stories from the dive bars, leather bars, dance clubs, and taverns where the real movement began. Curator Art Smith takes This Way Out's David Hunt on a trip down memory lane.
Probably remember the first gay bar you ever visited, especially if you came out in the days before dating apps like Grindr, Scruff, and Her. Perhaps it was the Odyssey Disco in West Hollywood in the late 1970s, or the Eagle, a leather bar in San Francisco's South of Market neighborhood in the 1980s, or My Sister's Room, a lesbian bar in Midtown Atlanta in the 1990s. Whatever the era, gay bars have been central to the queer experience for generations, as sites of both protests and parties. In the United States, the modern gay liberation movement traces its origins in the 1960s to demonstrations at several clubs, notably the Stonewall Inn in New York's Greenwich Village. South London's Royal Vauxhall Tavern attracted a gay clientele as early as the 1940s, when it hosted drag shows that were popular with soldiers returning from World War II. In the late 80s, the tavern lived up to its royal moniker when rocker Freddie Mercury smuggled Princess Diana into the club, disguised as a man. I'm David Hunt. Every gay bar, it seems, from gritty dives to glitzy hotspots, has its stories to tell. One man has made it his mission to collect them and share them online.
Welcome to another episode of the Gay Barchive Show, where we explore gay history one bar at a time. I'm your host, Art Smith, and our guest today is author Daniel M. Jaffe, who will be telling us about his favorite bars from Boston's colorful gay past.
I'll play an excerpt from Art Smith's interview with Daniel Jaffe in a bit, but first a little background. Smith's gay history project, Gay Barchives, is exactly what it sounds like, an online archive that preserves the memory of scores of gay bars. Gay plus bar plus archives equals Gay Barchives. The project, which Smith launched during the COVID pandemic, has a number of moving parts. There's the YouTube channel, where Smith posts hour-long interviews with people like Jaffe, including bar owners, bar patrons, bar employees, and even the occasional academic researcher, all related to gay bars. The Gay Barchives Facebook page has 10,000 followers and counting, who share their personal stories and connect, or reconnect in some cases, with other gay bar veterans. And the GayBarchives.com website includes an e-commerce shop that sells t-shirts and other merch emblazoned with the logos of popular gay bars of the past and present. I sat down with Smith and asked him about the enduring role of the gay bar scene in the LGBTQ plus experience.
You know, I've kind of compared them to community centers, churches, meeting halls, all rolled up into one, because so much of our history is wrapped around the bar scene. And it's not just about drinking, it's about socializing. I remember back, as you were saying, in the late 70s into the 80s, I would go out 7 or 8 nights a week. You know, it didn't matter if it was a school night or not. After you went to dinner with a friend, you would go to the bar just to see somebody that, you know, was like you and have a common experience. Whether or not you were going to drink, it was, you know, it's the place that we organized all of our nonprofit organizations that fight for us, the, you know, whether it's GLAAD or HRC or Equality, all of these groups kind of have their roots in the gay bar scene. Of course, all of the uprisings, Stonewall, Black Knight, Black Cat, they all happened in bars. So the bars are really kind of the foundation of our community back then.
There are still plenty of gay bars around, an estimated 800 in the United States alone. But that number was about twice as high in the early 1980s, the good old days before the internet, dating apps, and the AIDS epidemic. For those too young to remember the decadent decade after Stonewall, I asked Smith to take us back in time. Turns out it wasn't all that inclusive.
They were very specialized, let's say, back in the 70s. What I was seeing back then, a lot of the bars had a very specific concept, a very specific flavor, and those bars would enforce the rules so that they could maintain that identity. So there were bars that would only allow white men with leather harnesses or leather pants or whatever. Women were not allowed in. Guys in polo shirts were not allowed in. Guys wearing cologne were not allowed in. You know, it was a very specific market they were targeting. Initially, the Eagles, a lot of the Eagle bars, they did not allow women. They did not allow drag queens. They did not allow effeminate men in there unless they were a part of the community. So at one time, we saw a lot of bars that had very specific concepts of who they were there to serve, whether it was an Asian drag bar or a bear bar or a leather bar or a disco. They had specific identities, and you did not see as much crossover even with lesbians in the bars that were for men. It was very segmented. I didn't even think about it until I got into this project.
Now let's listen to an excerpt of author Daniel Jaffe's Barchives interview, in which he remembers the first gay bar he frequented, Sporters in Boston, in the late 1970s. The first time, he went with a friend. The second time, well, that's where the story gets interesting.
I was still very nervous about it. I'd never been to a gay bar on my own. So a few weeks went by, and I think it was a Friday night. I decided I'm going to go, and no matter what happens, it just happens. I'm going to experience gay life. So gradually the bar filled up, and then at some point, probably around 10, the bartender brings me another beer, which I hadn't ordered because I still hadn't finished my first one after about 2 hours. And he said, somebody down at the end of the bar sent you this beer. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's like being in one of those romantic movies, those rom-com things. And so I looked at the end of the bar, and there was a guy a bit older than me, and like maybe 10 years older, and he raised his beer bottle to me. I raised to him the one that had been sent to me. And I knew from the movies, when someone does that, you're supposed to go over. So I went over to him and thanked him. We started chatting. And then the next thing, it just shows how naive I was. So while I'm chatting with him, a friend of his comes over and sticks his tongue in my ear. So I didn't know what to do, so I just ignored it. So this guy kept his tongue in my ear while I'm talking to his friend. It was very strange. And then a couple of other friends of theirs came in, and they decided they were all going back to an apartment. Did I want to join them? Now, I had never gone home with anyone from a bar before. But I had said to myself, you know, anything goes tonight. So I said, okay, I'll go with you, not having a clue as to what I might be getting myself into. So we walked a few blocks, they bought beer, we go up to his apartment, we go in, and there are these two giant Irish setters that he's house-sitting for, who are jumping around. Okay, fine. Well, we sit around. For some reason, they put I Love Lucy reruns on TV. I mean, as we're sitting around this little living room, and they're passing a joint. And of course, good Jewish boy that I was, I had never smoked. So I just sort of, you know, held the joint and didn't smoke it, and then passed it. And they all noticed and commented on it. So I'm getting increasingly embarrassed. Okay, they're drinking and drinking. And finally, the two friends they had brought are bored, and they leave. The guy who's the tongue guy, whose apartment it is, he passes out in the bedroom. So now it's me and the guy who ordered me the beer on his sofa. And then he passes out. Now, by this time, it's already 2:30 in the morning. And by then, the T in Boston, the subway, has stopped running. And I was still new to the city and didn't have a sense of how else to get home. So I figured, well, I'll just wait on the sofa until 5:30 in the morning when the T runs again. And then the two Irish setters jumped on the sofa and wanted to cuddle on my lap. So I slept with the two dogs. And the way I think of it is my first experience at a gay bar is I slept with two hairy beasts. And it went just fine. And actually, in the morning when I left, I was thrilled because I thought, I can do this. I can handle this. I can handle going home with four men. It's no big deal.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt, continuing my conversation with Art Smith, who spearheads the Gay Barchives Project. Back in the 1970s, when I came out, bars were a place where older gays would sometimes take younger gays under their wing, in terms of telling them about gay history, gay culture, that sort of thing. Have any of your guests talked about that?
Yeah, and it's very much true, especially, you know, as we were talking about, the bars were kind of segmented in the style that they were. So the bars that were more local watering holes, neighborhood bars, holes in the wall, things of that nature, that you could actually sit down and have a conversation. Those bars very much had that feeling. I've had people tell me, whether it was talking about an experience at Julius in New York or talking about, you know, something from Atlanta or LA, that very often that happened, that they met people and sat there and had conversations with them and learned about, you know, not only the other person, but also about gay stuff. Because we did not have ready information at our fingertips. So if you were new to an area or new to the, you know, being out, you needed other people to guide you because you were not going to find out. There were not rainbow flags flapping in front of the businesses. They were mostly kind of underground and incognito.
Of the 150 interviews you've conducted so far, can you think of a guest whose experience really stands out?
You probably didn't stumble across it. It was an interview from several years ago, a guy named Ted Binkley, who I knew personally from Atlanta. He was a partner in both Illusions, which was Atlanta's drag showcase, and also in Crazy Rays. And then later, after he left Atlanta, opened a bar called Zippers in, I believe it was Montgomery, Alabama. But when I interviewed him, one of the questions I always used to ask people is, what was the first gay bar you went to and what was that experience like for you? And he responded that it was a little bar in downtown Nashville, Tennessee. And he was not old enough to go in yet. But back at that, in those days, they were kind of underground bars anyway. And if you looked, you know, responsible and gay and weren't going to cause trouble, they let you in anyway. Well, it turns out that experience for him was in 1952. So it was 72 years ago. And there are not a lot of people out there that you can find that can talk about going to a gay bar 72 years ago.
As I wrapped up my conversation with Art Smith, it seemed only fair to ask him about his first gay bar experience. It happened when he visited a friend, a former boyfriend actually, in 1978.
So we went out to dinner. I went down to see him at school in Baltimore, and we went out to dinner. And after dinner, he said, hey, I heard this a cool bar across the street. Let's go over there and check it out. And so we did, and ordered a drink, and I'm standing there maybe a foot or two above the dance floor, is a little elevated platform, and I'm sipping on my drink and looking at the dance floor. And after a couple of minutes, I looked at Mark and I said, everybody on the dance floor is male. And he said, yeah, I know. And I said, what's up with that? He said, well, my roommate Jim told me about this place and it's a gay bar. And I was in shock because that was the first time I'd been in a gay bar. It was called the Hippopotamus, one of the most iconic bars from Baltimore. It, I think, lasted until 2015. So it was there for quite a long time. It's now a CVS if you want to go visit it. And it just changed my perspective completely because all of a sudden, I now knew that there was a gay community. It wasn't just, you know, a couple of random people, me and Mark and a few others somewhere. But there were actually hundreds and thousands of us all over the place. And it kind of opened the door to a new lifestyle.
I'd like to thank my guest, Art Smith, who curates the Gay Barchives Project at gaybarchives.com. And to anyone who remembers my first gay bar, Monroe's in Hawthorne, California, the beat goes on. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
I can't let you do this. I don't know if I'm ever gonna be the same.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Joe Bainline and Michael LeBeau and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. You heard music by Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Sylvester, Icolics, and Deuce Williams. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Dyer V of Winston, Oregon, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WGOT Gainesville, Florida, 5UV Adelaide, South Australia, KRFP Moscow, Idaho, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.